You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you are with me today on Dr. Michelle Live. 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4, and you can email me, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. We are having a heat wave here, and I think you all are having heat waves, your own versions of heat waves, no matter where you are. I think it was 100% humidity, 100 degrees. It's just... It can be wilting, and you can feel like, oh, no energy. You can also feel it's oppressive. We talk about the weather being oppressive. It's oppressively hot. So listen to this. Oppression is a big word. Oppression can come in many forms. Oppression can be something that you lived with for a very long time, and what was being oppressed? Yourself. You, yourself. Your desires, your wants, your needs, your voice, your freedom. We can look outside our outside eyes. We're going to talk all today about oppression and oppressive feelings, but not in the way that you're thinking about it, the way that I'm expressing it at this particular moment. What happens when Catholics who have an oppression, you may think, well, I don't have an oppression. And you might think you don't have an oppression because you're used to being the way you are. And the way you are, just fine, good, right, just. And you do good things. You're a cool person. And you do things for reasons. I do this because I'm this kind of person. I'm that kind of person. Giving that identity. But what, when we come down to it, that center, the core, which we know should be filled with Christ. We know it should be, as Catholics, we know that should be filled. And wherever you are on the faith-based system, we know that for a mentally healthy outlook and thus a physically healthy life, as is possible, toxins are still toxins. Radiation is still radiation. Genetics are still genetics. We get dealt just by virtue of our genetics a certain deck of cards or ailment. You may have that propensity, but those ailments that you feel like, well, that runs in my family, that's just who I am. You have the ability. God makes all things new. You have the ability and the resources to modify that. Cure it? Sure. 100%? Sure. No. But you can at least modify it. But why not strive for the power? Why not strive for the cure? Why not strive for opening that door out into nowhere and walking through it to get away from oppression? Now, how do Catholics get a double dose of oppression? How can you turn your own Catholicism or your own Christianity or your own sense of religious fervor into an extenuation of your oppression, of being oppressed? You can do that. And we're going to talk about that a little bit during this program. We're going to look at different ways in the gospel that things that we hold on to as tenets of truth and tenets of ways to live can actually self-serve us while we think we're serving others. So I want you to start becoming a little bit more clear on who you are. How do we get away from who we, I mean, when we really think, okay, I'm going to change this behavior. I'm going to change my way of speaking. I'm going to change the way I present myself. Oftentimes we do that without having any kind of core whatsoever. So you don't know who you are. And as I've mentioned before, that wonderful lady that I know is a friend of mine, not a patient. And she, she had tons of trauma in her life growing up, and she ended up into different kinds of problems and addictions. And she wrote a poem when she was very young, and she told me I could have blank permission to mention it anytime I wanted to. And that is that one sentence that always, she was like a, I think, preteen or teenager when she wrote this, but it was about her eating disorder, and it was about her and her family. And she said in her little poem, and I will never forget this one line, it was an adolescent poem, "I am self-centered without a center." And wow, I don't know if you realize not only what that said about you, but what it says about all of us who find ourselves in this kind of reality, in this kind of world where we really never had a thought or an understanding that we didn't have a center. We might think that people are abusing our center, that they're violating our center, that they're irritating our center, they're preventing our center from expressing itself. And sometimes we don't even have one. And we misinterpret the words of our own teaching that we must empty ourselves completely and give it all over to Christ. Well, yeah, that all makes sense. But if the words and the semantics dovetail into issues that you have, and how do you know that? How do you know you might be one of those people? Well, you look around. You look around at your relationships. Are they always the same song, different verse? Do you find that you just seem to be around people who are always disappointing, always betraying in some slight way or not slight way, who always... Are you put it out there, and yet they take that little extra mile. You give the extra mile, but they take the extra mile. There's no reciprocation. And then you feel guilty for even wanting reciprocation. Maybe I don't give enough. These are all tip-offs that we may be working with certain forms of someone who was not allowed to develop a personality from down deep inside. And when we're busy and we have husbands and wives and we have children, we don't tend to see the evidence of it that strongly because we're busy. And we can busy ourselves out of it. We can pray ourselves into kind of the novena funk, the novena cloud, as that one priest described it. We can give ourselves so much over that there's nothing left of us. All that can happen, but there's a certain point in your life, some young, some older, where they realize something is wrong with this picture. But it takes a lot to get there. Case in point, talking to someone 2 or 3 days ago, right before the weekend, who had a wife who is involved in certain addictions. And this person, this gentleman, is putting his foot down in their family. You cannot continue to do this. I am putting down my boundaries. This is it. This is it. The boundaries are here. You cannot bring this over into our life. You're irrational, you're doing addictions, you're harming all of us. I love you, I'm going to stay married to you, but we have to do something about this. Well, in a very short order, the boundaries keep getting moved. The boundaries keep going further. It's kind of like those rotating chicken coops, you know, where you put them like in a little square, and then after they eat that one, that whole patch of grass or whatever they eat, they wear that one out. They keep rotating it and moving this little pen. Well, that's what happened to his boundaries. What happens to our boundaries? His boundaries kept moving. They looked like they were the same thing. It's the same idea of telling your child, if you don't stop that, there's going to be consequences. Now, how many of you can identify with that? Either you heard it in your own life or you did it to someone else, to your own children. If you don't stop that, now, if you don't stop that, you're going to suffer those consequences. And those consequences never come, or they're, by the time they do come, it's already been done. The child has already been screaming and yelling. The child has already been playing, not coming into the house. The child is already not obeying you. So that is a kind of or you as your kid, you're always pushing the limits. Well, that's great. You're a kid. Kids always push limits. That's where they have to find out what their limits are. That's the way it is in the entire kingdom on this earth, is that we find out where our boundaries are, where our limits are. But those of us who aren't allowed or never knew how to set them because the stakes, the fear was so strong. It's always fear. This husband's fear was so strong that his wife would leave. His fear was so strong that he would have to end the entire relationship, or she would, that you keep fudging on the boundaries. And then the person knows that my overhead, the price I pay to continue in the family and continue my addictions, there it is. There's the price. I thought it was 10 cents, but actually maybe it's 25 cents or a dollar, but hey, I can pay that dollar. So it's the amount of getting used to how high a price, because those boundaries never get fulfilled. So when you lived in a life without boundaries, but your boundaries were, where do I have to go in order to get the love of a parent or the love of a family member, or for them to hear me or to believe me that I was harmed? Where do I have to go with that? Those boundaries are the ones that cause you to not develop yourself. Because if you really put your foot down and said, no, I like to paint, and you were so, never want to go there. We're going to take this on the other side of the break. I am Dr. Michelle. See you on the other side of the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you're walking with me today on Dr. Michelle Live. 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. You can email me, DM live at breadboxmedia.com. Boundaries in a boundaryless world with a boundaryless self. This free-floating who you are. You may not identify with it. Oftentimes the people who say, oh no, I know exactly who I am, are the very people who can put on that good show. They're the people who have this idea of self-centered without a center. And it may not be the self-centeredness that we're talking about. It may be the fact that you have oh my goodness, that's my dog sneezing in the background. Anyway, poor dog. Living in the moment. Dr. Michelle Live, absolutely. So you get to hear my dog sneezing. Okay, so, but it may be the fact that your center just doesn't exist, that it's kind of a void and you're always afraid to get there because you were taught that walking and claiming your own center was dangerous. There was a danger there because the price that you might pay, it's that you'll really, really, really not like the consequences here. And instead of it being a consequence for an action, like not coming in when you're called or not eating that cookie or whatever it was, the consequence was, I will withdraw my love from you. I will not love you. You're not worthy of my love. And then switch around and boom, you're worthy of my love. Look what you did. Look at that beautiful curtsy you did. Look at that dance that you did. Look at that painting you did. Look how you can. Or even more demoralizing, always getting that idea that you're just not good enough, but then having your parents about you to the outside world. When you're standing there with your mom or dad and they're just going on and on and on about your achievements and about you, or to the teachers. And yet inside there's always that withdrawing, that always withdrawing, or they have their own issues once the doors are closed and you feel like you've got to be the one to glue it all back together. You've got to be the one to hold up the brothers and the sisters. You have to be the one. Now, you could even have your parent die. You could even have your parent be sick. And you still can get the same lack of development of self. So what do we do about this? Number one is to acknowledge it. That's one of the hardest things to do because we feel already guilt-laden. Like somehow we've done something wrong. You feel like somehow you just, if you mess up, you could ruin someone else. You have been made responsible for someone else's happiness. So if you look this way or you're too loud, I knew a woman who, as a child, had a mother who had a chronic illness. And she just couldn't take anything loud. She couldn't take anything she had to put energy out into because she was ill. And she really was ill. But the child, the woman, as a little girl, began to feel like if she expressed herself like a child would, to laugh loudly, to play the piano, to sing, that would be harmful to her mother, irritate her mother. So she learned. You look back as an adult and you think, well, I understand that. But as a child, you're learning who I am irritates other people. Who I am causes people to be sicker than they are. Who I am breaks up the family. Who I am can cause my little brother, let's say, or my little sister to get hit by a car. You have to always be on watch for everybody else. This is a really, really common theme. Now, how do you make it worse by being Catholic? Well, when you have that kind of beginning, when that's what you're automatically doing anyway, denying self, feeling guilty, feeling responsible. You can say, well, gee, that sounds kind of good and saintly. It's actually a warped sense. A warped sense of responsibility can get you to a place where you keep embracing those things that tell you you're not good enough. You need to serve more. You need to think of the other and not of yourself. All these very biblical things that we have to go and dive down to help, no matter if we're tired, if we're hungry, if our own family suffers, to help someone else. And it is more common than you think, so don't feel alone. When you go and you hear those things from the Bible, you go that extra step to help somebody in need. That every single thing, it's almost like being obsessed with not stepping on a crack in a sidewalk. And there are those people, sadly, with obsessive compulsive disorder that have taken that little child's rhyme, step on a crack, break my mother's back. That was an old, old, old little rhyme. I don't even know where that came from, but that's where it came from. But they take that so obsessively that they literally cannot and will not step on a crack. They'll do everything to avoid a crack in the sidewalk. And that is enormously energy consuming. Now, are you doing that in your personal life? Obsessing with every word, every action, every thought. It might be interpreted this way. It's called in the outside world of people that in the more general world, being worried what other people think. And you may not be what that implies, that you're always making yourself prettier, or you're always, or you're always worried about your dress or your car or your status. But you might always be worried what other people are thinking, feeling, because you feel responsible for that. The idea of turning the other cheek. Turning the other cheek. All these examples. But if we're used to always having to have turned our other cheek for fear of rejection from our own parents or our own friends or our own husbands or wife, that we tend to think, well, if I just turn it more, if I just turn it more, pretty soon you're looking in the back of your head. If I just turn it more, if I just turn it more, that's my problem. So why is this so important? It's really important because you are actually doing what you're told all throughout not to do. If you're taking your faith very seriously, but also it's very mentally unhealthy to do this because it does take enormous energy to second guess everybody because it cannot control a thing. Because the very people whose love you are trying to win, the people you are trying to placate, the people that you don't want, that you're doing something wrong or that you're not being kind or loving, the very people that you're afraid to lose, there's nothing you're going to do anyway. If they are fickle, if they are betrayers, if they are false, if they're abusers, if they're sick, if they're selfish, there's nothing you're going to do to make them not that way. Is that we've come across in our life, such as if you get in an argument with somebody and you just feel, you feel an enormous amount of anxiety, be decisive in your argument and stand up completely for yourself. You might scream a lot. But when you really look at what you're saying, you're yelling in pain, grief, and anxiety, establishing a boundary. You're not making your no's mean no's and your yes mean yes. And that's an important aspect, which we're going to get into on the other side of the break. Why are you the kind of person who cannot say a no and stick with a no, cannot say a yes and stick with a yes, always second guessing your no, always your yes, always wondering if you did it the wrong way, if it's something that you were wrong about, if you give someone a no? And you might be a perpetual yes person, where you say yes to take on the burden of the other person's deficiency. So we're going to talk about all this on the other side of the break, what you can do about it, and get some biblical help as well. I am Dr. Michelle. We will see you on the other side of the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you are with me today on Dr. Michelle Live. And we're talking about when your yeses mean yes and your no's mean no, and how we can get to the place where we really don't know something, how to do that. So simple. We just don't know. We don't know the difference. How we can feel oppressed or be oppressed. And that word oppression that I mentioned in the very beginning is a big word, and it sounds too dire, especially if you're the kind of person who learned not to be able to say no to anything. There's fear, anxiety, you will be left, you will be abandoned. And then you take all kinds of betrayals, abuse, and abuse can be in the form of just being that person who does take that extra night shift over and over and over, or who does take that extra holiday shift over and over because you're the good guy, because you understand someone's got a sick child at home. And that's even a hard example for me to even say, for me to think, oh, well, gosh, what if somebody did have a sick child at home? Yeah, of course you want someone to take that shift for you. And sometimes you can do that. But if you're the person who's always the go-to person, what about your family? What about when you're in need? And so we can get all twisted up as Catholics and as Christians but that's what selflessness is. You give till it hurts. You give till it drops. You never say never. You always give. You go without. You love your saints who took away all their clothing and all their everything, and they're covered in sores and pestilence and starving, and all their riches are gone and all their family is gone. And these are all examples of finally getting to God. Well, sometimes you end up getting to that point where it is the modern day version of that very thing. And you're doing it because you were born of dysfunction. You were brought up in dysfunction, and you continued on into dysfunction until where you are just chewed up and you don't even realize it until you just say, no more, I can't do this. Or you wonder why is this like this? Why am I always out of energy? I heard someone the other day talk about how worried they were about their kids and how worried they were about it. One of them was in a very severe addiction. And the point of the whole conversation was they started to get help themselves because they realized that their entire being was involved in trying to get someone else to change. Now, any parent is going to go to the ends of the earth for their kid. And I don't care. Because you're not doing that person any good. If you're always the go-to person, you're harming yourself and you're actually harming the other person. You're robbing them of the opportunity to stand on their own two feet. You're robbing them of the opportunity to take responsibility for themselves. But I don't even want to go there because it's too easy for those of you who are so used to this then to use that as yet another do-gooding situation that you're in. Well, then I need to do that for them. It's about why is there that revulsion about doing something for yourself? And that constant guilt and that guilt hammer. There's nowhere in here in the Bible or anywhere else where it says that you need to be shamed. You need to feel ashamed that you're not doing enough, that you're not good enough. You're supposed to leave it all. And if that is your false God, if you've been brought up to believe that's what goodness is to have nothing of your own because somebody else needs it, needs that life force, needs that energy, needs that identity that they can't have. You have your own identity. Because it infringes on them for their own dysfunction. And that's where we get to the familial part. That's why people go to healing the family tree. That's why they go to healing services. That's why they pray for healing of the family tree. Oftentimes you think it's about, well, there's addiction in the family. But with addiction, hand in hand, I guarantee you, is emotional deprivation, emotional betrayal, dishonesty. You cannot have an addiction without somewhere being dishonest. Period. It just can't happen. Because begin their addiction and say, today At the dinner table, I'm going to log on to porn. Or today at the dinner table, I know I'm going to drink to excess, and you all can sit here and watch me. Or here, Grandpa. Grandpa, you're going to drink to excess. I'm giving you, you know, a gallon of wine or whatever the grandpa drinks. No, you give him he takes a little bit. Everybody's like all freaked out. They're just sitting there holding in, hoping he doesn't drink too much or get obnoxious. And everything is done over and over. And then the abuses are taken up to, well, they drink. So you cannot have those kinds of situations without lying. You cannot have abuse without lying. If you take the first hand of abuse, physical or otherwise, verbal, emotional, and the emotional is the hardest one because verbal you can say, see what you did. But you're always hoping that other person is going to say, oh yeah, and then they stop. And it doesn't work that way. So you just get used to denying yourself. And that is the beginnings and the form that oppression takes. You're oppressing and depressing yourself so that eventually, and what is the final goal of all this? If you want to go now from the psychological into the spiritual, we'll go from the psychological into the spiritual. What do you think the whole goal is? Knock out like bowling pins as many people as you can. So you're going to knock out the abuser by being the abuser, and therefore they can't fulfill their goal on earth as a good, loving, God-fearing person who shines with the light of God. And you take out the abused because they oppress, depress, and so they are either so down, so downtrodden, or dead, or addicted themselves, or meet abuse with abuse, that they're not going to be. So you take out two for one. It's a dovetail, like they used to make old furniture, the little dovetail. One fits nice and neatly into the other. So what are you going to do? Well, you can start today by understanding that you can say no without strong feelings of guilt. Only you have to practice it like anything else. I can tell you today, you can play Amazing Grace on the guitar. If you've never played the guitar, I will guarantee you, you can do it. Now, when will you be able to do it? Can't tell you that. Will it be easy for you or hard for you? Can't tell you that. Will you be reading music or not reading music, playing it by ear? Can't tell you that, but I can guarantee you, You can play Amazing Grace on the guitar. And why do I know that? Even people without arms can play Amazing Grace on a guitar. They can use their feet. I've seen it done. So there's so many things. I've seen people wounded in war who had no use of arms or legs and painted, and you all know this, you've all seen them somewhere, painted beautiful landscapes with their teeth. You can do it. I don't know how your path is going to be. I don't know how you're going. I know how you can do it because one, you do it by getting the right tools. You do it by saying, yeah, I'm depressed. I am oppressed. I have been oppressed. I'm not where I need to be at this particular point in time. I know that and I'm a part of that, but I can't take responsibility for it. How do I do that? One, you ask God, you tell him that. I know that I've had a really weird place in life. I know that. And I know that I've had this problem and that problem. I know that someone hurt me and somebody out there has been raped. Somebody out there has been abused. Somebody out there has been hit. Somebody out there has been neglected. Somebody out there has been, you know, a product of an alcohol. Somebody out there has been a product of a dead parent, a parent who died too early, or you walked in on something you shouldn't have walked in on, or you had a brother or sister or neighbor or somebody. There isn't anybody out there. There might be somebody out there. Let me put it this way. There has to be somebody at the other end of the bell curve. So somebody's out there that didn't have these things. But most of you have had something. So you just say, you know what, God, I know I've had something. And I don't know how to I don't know how to come out of this darkness and this way of being without blaming and feeling bad about it. I've only got the tools I have. I don't know how to use any other tools. So help me. And you begin there. You begin there. And we're going to take this up on the other side of the break to talk about a little bit about prayerfully how you can do that. But also, I want to just give you some practical things, some practical steps on kind of how to make your no's mean no and your yeses to mean yes. And it's not an easy thing to do. Like playing Amazing Grace on the guitar, it's going to take a little practice, especially if you don't have a guitar. All right. I'm Dr. Michelle. We will see you on the other side of the break. You can call me 573-4BREAD-4 or you can email emlive@breadboxmedia.com.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you're with me today on Dr. Michelle Live. It's kind of a sultry, hot, melting type of Monday morning. And you know, no matter where you are in the country and how hot it gets, we can follow the seasons because there's a season of everything. And right now, there's a season where we are sweltering in the heat. And many of you, I know, because I have experienced this many a year, you think, oh, I just need something cold. I would love to have that freezing day that I just dreaded last winter. And then when the winter comes, you think, oh my gosh, I can't take this one more day. I need to have that nice hot summer day that I was so worried about before. And we're like that in life. So often we tend to see the immediate and project in the future and project our fantasy of how great something else would be. That's when we have an exterior locus, and we have, and our interior self is rather nebulous. It's floaty. We don't have one. So how do we have our no's mean no's and our yes mean yeses, and why is it important? Well, one thing is that we're told over and over and over and over again, do not have any false idols. No false idols. When you make someone more important than you, that's a false idol. Even though we have everywhere, Romans, New Testament, Old Testament, make other people more important than you. St. Francis's prayer, we love that. Let me not want to be loved, but to love. Not to be the one to be consoled, but to console. And we just love that. But I'll tell you, if you're the person who has that no center in the inside, and you do that from the day you were born, that was your legacy, you fall right into that, because what you're doing is giving yourself permission for not being who God wants you to be. That's what you're doing. You're giving yourself permission to be less than God has in store for you. Many of us discover in the most difficult possible way imaginable, because we end up in all kinds of physical depression, emotional depressions, physical illnesses, taken advantage of, monetarily poorer, because we spend all our time meeting the needs of another person. And you know what? That actually is irresponsible. Because when we do all that to meet the needs of one other person, we actually tend to do that for everybody around us. I've seen parents who are more of the child than the child is, because they constantly cater to the needs of the child. They don't want the child to blow up. They don't want that. They're afraid the child is going to not love them because they came from a place. You came from a place of not feeling loved, even if the outside of it all looked loving, and you keep telling yourself they did the best they could. You don't want to blame because you're a good person. Of caring for your parents' needs more than you care for yourself. And not because you chose it, but because that was imposed upon you. That was the family heirloom. You always take care of your parent. Not when you're an adult and they're old and infirm, but you start out that way. We become broken and we become lost in other people. And then we can become lost in our family, our marriage, our church, and our workplace. So when we talk about sins of the fathers, when we talk about things being passed down from generation to generation, this good, kind, loving, you know, so many times we have these amazing stories of these amazing parents. And way too often, the saint, my mother, and my alcoholic father. And sometimes vice versa. The saint, my father, and my demanding mother. But in all that dynamic, the children got lost. The children were always sitting, eating their popcorn, watching the mother and daddy show. What are they going to need? Am I supposed to support my mother now while my daddy's drunk? Or am I supposed to? I know people who actually entered into very unholy relationships with their own parent to keep their other parent from being constantly abused and thrown down flights of stairs. Now that's extreme. But now back up about 1,000 steps and take a look at your own life. And what did you do? What did you do to keep peace in the family? When you wanted to be the loud, boisterous, dramatic person and draw pictures and dance on a stage and sing and let your voice be heard and be happy and be loving. And when you did that, you got all these accolades and all of a sudden you got slapped down. Yeah, but you know what? You were a little out of tune there. Or I don't know if you knew it, but you had something in your nose when you were singing. Next time, come see mom or dad and we'll take it out or whatever. You know, I hear all these stories. All variations of the same theme. The joy gets slapped down because in essence, the other person is in competition. The other person, the parent, will not. If I didn't get the family heirloom, the family legacy is if I didn't get joy, you're not getting joy. And they may not be that diabolical or that intentional. Let me put it that way. That intentional. Because they themselves don't know it. But if you're hearing these words or you are at a place where something is just feeling like, you know what, I just somehow, I don't know where or how it's going to happen, but I know something's got to change here. So start with that prayer. Ask Our Lady to begin gathering those little seeds, planting those little shoots, so that the garden of roses, the garden of flowers, the garden of life-giving vegetables and herbs can be planted in with you, because it is never too late. It is never too late. But you begin with that. You begin with a conversation. I don't know how to interpret your words, because if you do not, if you worship on the altar of doing good for other people, you're still not worshiping on the altar you're supposed to worship on. If you worship on the altar of constantly self-serving, self-sacrifice, but by that you there's no you, and at the end of your day, you know, do you want to get to heaven? This is a very simplistic, childish way to look at it, but do you want to get to heaven and say, and God said, well, you know what? You had this amazing voice. How come you never used it? I didn't expect you to be in Carnegie Hall. That wasn't your path. But, you know, you had this amazing, beautiful voice. You know, why didn't you use it? Why didn't you grace someone else's ears by singing? Yeah, you served a lot of cookies and you decorated a lot of cupcakes. And yeah, okay, that I can. Yeah, you weren't doing anything outrightly, but you didn't do what you didn't use the gift I gave you. What about that? Why don't you take stock today of the gifts you've been given? Do you sing? Do you bake? Do you draw? Do you laugh? Do you have pretty eyes? Do you have nice lips? Do you have a way of looking at the world in a silly, funny way that little kids delight in or somebody else delights in? Do you like animals? Do they happen to like you? What's your gift? What's your gift? And I don't want to hear your gift is serving others. I want to hear, because we all are supposed to serve others. Those with the most amazing outwardly accepted gifts and those without. So what are the gifts? The only way you can say, make your yes mean a yes and your no mean a no, is by understanding or beginning to learn about your gifts and not allowing them to be run and diluted and run into the ground and minimized and not appreciated. Because if you do that, then you're just a fodder for anything. All the good things you do in the world, they might mean something and they might be helpful, but wouldn't it be a trip to get to your end of days and say, well, that's all cool, you know, and you didn't do anything that causes me to absolutely turn my back, but I really don't know you because I created a singer. I created Mary the singer, and you were supposed to sing to the trees, to the birds, to your children, to the outside, in church, somewhere, rather than hide that gift because you think it was prideful or because your mom didn't want to hear it or somebody was jealous, and go ahead and do 1,000 cupcakes every week. Great, those people ate. That's wonderful. Good. But that's not the gift I gave you. So I want you to think about the gifts you were given. And what are you doing with any of them? Are you using any of them? Which ones are you using? And if you're not, use one today. As I said, you will be able to play Amazing Grace on the guitar even if you don't have a guitar, because you'll come across one once you start wanting one. You won't know what to do with it. You'll find out what to do with it. We don't know the time frame. We don't know when, but you go by the simple ask, the simple question. I'm ready, Lord. I am ready. I'm ready to be me. I'm ready to be me. And that me is not a bad word. I'm Dr. Michelle. We will talk to you tomorrow. Dr. Michelle Live. See you tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.